The Nerdcast Empire is on the air. We are back. It is the Hard Rock Empire for this Sunday, March the 16th, 2025. I am Matt in the studio. Great to have you along with us. We have another week of the best hard rock and heavy metal from around the world that we're going to bring you here on the Nerdcast Empire's Hard Rock Empire, as we do each and every Sunday, 7 o'clock p.m. EDT. And we've another really good week of music. A lot of really good stuff. Some big name stuff that we'll talk about when we get to the new music that we didn't pick, but you should definitely go check out. We got some news items as well that we'll get to before we get to the new music for this week. Joining me in studio, as always, is Mike. Mike, how's it going?
It's going. Another decent week. A lot of releases, for one. Mm-hmm. A lot of quality, a lot of stuff that I feel like would grow on me if I gave more time to, but maybe within the confines of a week, I didn't have enough time to really digest everything. But, you know, I did find a couple really good albums for the week, and there's a lot more out there to get into.
Yeah, I think there, you know, it's one of those weeks that I really felt like there was a ton of really good stuff. And then there was also kind of a second tier of stuff, like you said, that I think there have been a lot of weeks where I would have certainly picked this stuff because, you know, just maybe there wasn't like the top tier stuff. It was kind of that second group down. But this week, you know, it was hard to crack that top of the best of the best, if you will. And like I said, in addition to the stuff that we're going to tell you about, we also had a couple of big releases from artists that we talk about a lot on this podcast, and what I've heard of those has been really good as well. So, you know, that's also part of it as well, is that there was just a really loaded week. Once again, I feel very fortunate that, you know, once again, we're in a situation where we just have more good music than we know what to do with. But again, that's why you definitely want to make sure you check out Mike's playlist, which we'll post in the chat when we get to that point. Because that is going to allow you to listen to all the music from this week and be able to pick your own favorites. But before we get to the new music for this week, we've got to talk some news headlines, so we'll get to that first. And this is a story that I'll admit I didn't think we would discuss in detail on the podcast. It was something that I didn't think was necessary. I don't want to say it's not newsworthy, but it's kind of one of those things that I feel like is becoming more and more common. And when I saw the story last week, I didn't really give it too much of a second thought. But then over the weekend, it became a trending story on Reddit. And I think, to my surprise, overwhelmingly a positive reaction to the story. And the story talks about, we've talked about Ghost. They've just released a new album. We're in the process of releasing a new album. They've got a new single out. They're going on tour once again. And they have announced that, you know, they're going to do the no phone policy at their concerts to try to get people to stop watching this concert through a screen and just enjoy being there.
Yeah,
this is not, it's not as uncommon as it used to be. I feel like there are more bands that are taking this stance. I know a lot of comedians also take this stance, which would make sense because that would be really distracting if you're trying to enjoy a comedy show and somebody's looking at it through a phone. So, not a real big shock, but there are people out there that maybe don't necessarily agree with this policy, but it was encouraging to see a lot of the people on Reddit were of agreement. They were saying things like, yeah, you know, I'll take a couple pictures just to have something to remember that I was there, or post something on social media that'll show up in my memories. And then I put my phone away and I watch the show. Or, you know, even some people saying, you know, hey, maybe I had done this in the past and I realized how dumb it was because I'd never go back and watch these videos. They were, you know, because the bottom line is it's not going to be a good quality video because you're at a concert. It's going to be bouncing around. The sound quality,
you're never going to have soundboard quality audio.
Never.
There's no way.
It's not possible. So what you're getting is very poor compared to the just annoyance that you're doing to everybody around you, especially for the people that hold their phones up above their head and block the view of the people behind them. As someone who's not the tallest person in the world, that's incredibly annoying. I don't want to watch the concert through your phone. That's not why I'm here. But yeah, I know you're generally of the same mindset here, but your overall thoughts on this story that basically, like I said, I feel like, you know, Tobias Forge in this article in Metal Injection has found a lot of agreement, I think, with this policy.
Yeah, you know, and he frames his stance on it kind of around the idea that, you know, I'm trying to, me and the people that work with me on stage and off stage even, are working to give you this experience that you can remember. And in order to fully do that, you can't be doing it through your phone. Like, I need your attention in real time, not through a screen. And kind of like, hey, it's not because I don't want you recording the show. But even if it were, if it was just because, hey, I don't want you recording me on stage during the whole show, that's a good enough reason too. Either way you look at it, I think he's in the right here. And I guess maybe we finally reached that point where the idea, I mean, obviously cameras on phones get better and better with each next generation of phone, but I think we've reached the point now where the novelty of having a high powered camera on your phone has kind of worn off, where you no longer feel like, look what I can do with my phone now at a concert that I couldn't do back in 2002. That doesn't mean anything to people anymore. And I think when you look at concerts, whether you look at sporting events, any kind of event that you're buying a ticket to witness something, that should honestly be an escape from your device, not something to do along with your mobile phone. I just think, and I hope that the more positive than negative reaction to this kind of signals that I'm right about this, that people are finally realizing that there are so many things you can do that don't require looking at a screen. And by all means, do that.
Yeah, I just, you know, you're not going to get to go to a ton of concerts in your lifetime. If things go well, you'll get to go to a few every year. And, you know, those are memories that you're going to be able to make by just being in the moment. And when I think of some of the all-time great concerts I've gone to, I couldn't even imagine going back and be like, you know, what if I would have just recorded this whole concert on my phone instead? You would just miss out on so much. And again, it's just the irritation of everybody around you. And I think the fact that, and I think, you know, that these concerts generally give you the opportunity that, hey, if you are somebody who has to be on call and you need to access your phone, we're going to give you places in the venue that you can go and get the phone, whether it's out of a bag or out of a lockbox in some cases, and do that. So I feel like that kind of takes away the one counter argument. It's like, oh, well, you know, yeah, I can't have my, you know, I can't be without my phone because I might get a call from somebody important, which, I mean, some people are in that situation where they do have to be on call 24/7. And, you know, you don't want to run those people off. So good on them for doing that. But I would love to see not just artists, more artists take this stance. I would like to see concert venues take this stance. Yeah. Like, don't leave it up to the artist to be the bad guy. You know, if these, because as we've talked about so much, a lot of these concert venues, a lot of these festivals are all owned by the same companies. There's big conglomerates that just buy all these venues and festivals up. If these places would just kind of take a blanket stance and say, look, we're not going to let you have your phones out during a concert, you're going to have to put them in something, we'll give you places where you can do that, then it kind of goes back to the performer can be the good guy here. Like, hey, that's just the stance of the venue. You know, I can't do anything about that. And because nobody's really taken that stance as a venue or as a festival, it forces these guys sometimes to be the bad guy and say, no, I want you to watch the show that you paid good money for. Like, why would you pay all that money to watch it through a screen? I mean, the phones are great. I mean, the technology is great, but it's not that great. It's not as great as watching it and being there. And I just, to me, I've never understood the enjoyment factor of that. And I think, like I said, I hope this is a trend, and maybe the Reddit reaction of it is a sign that maybe people are ready to kind of take that step and say, hey, if you're willing to or you want to do that, we'll have your back on this one.
I think you could take that a step further, and the venues could offer what would be essentially like the same level of quality as like a disposable camera, but do so that has some sort of like USB memory functionality to it.
Yeah,
where you could basically take still shots. I mean, some of the best pictures I have from a concert were done on disposable cameras. Like, I think there's something to that as far as kind of to memorialize the event that doesn't involve having it out the entire time and staring through it, because that's ridiculous.
It is. And, you know, I think the other thing you can do, and we see this at a lot of conventions or events where they can basically just set up a photo booth with a professional photo camera, and you and your guests can get a photo of yourselves with the concert going on in the background, like put it kind of off to the side where, you know, and then just, and of course they would sell it because everybody, you know, everybody's got to make a dollar off of it. But at the same time, like, that's just another option that you could, now you have a professional quality photo of, you know, the time you were there, and you don't have to worry about trying to use your phone to take that picture. So I think there's a lot of options. The other thing too, and this is because we are very much on the physical release bandwagon, so it is worth mentioning. I think it's also would be good if more of these bands did physical concert video releases too, where it's like, hey, if you, I want a copy of this concert in Cincinnati that I went to. Okay, well, you can buy it. We're going to sell it to you. Even if it's just digitally, like, hey, you're going to go to the concert, you can enjoy it. We're also going to give you a copy of it, so you don't have to record it on your phone. You're going to have that video professionally done with the board audio that you'll be able to enjoy forever, as long as you bought the tickets to the show. Like, you know, there are ways to do that that just make way more sense than have people watching it through their phone.
Exactly.
So hopefully this is a trend that we'll see kind of continue on. I think that's certainly a step in the right direction, and encouraging that people seem to be on board with it. Kind of an alarming news story that I saw on Metal Injection last week. One of the kind of the all time classic DJs, and later would become a television personality, Matt Pinfield, is recovering from a coma that was caused by a massive stroke. And I think it's good news that he is still with us, because from all the sounds of this article, it sounds like if he very well could have not been, it was obviously dealing with this back in January, and just coming out of the coma, posting that he's alive, hoping to be out of the hospital by the end of the month, and even potentially back on the radio here before too long. But, you know, you think of the people from our era that are kind of those classic MTV personalities, DJs. Matt Pinfield's right up there near the top as far as guys that we grew up watching on television.
Yeah, absolutely. I kind of feel like, as far as that crop of VJs that were around when I first started becoming aware of MTV, he was kind of like the first one that you thought was like that kind of the earlier form of an Eddie Trunk, where it's like, this guy knows everything about all the music I know nothing about.
Yeah.
And you think of him as being the host of 120 Minutes, which was typically a show filled with music I wasn't really into, but felt like his knowledge of it somehow put him like top tier in terms of the industry. And just always thought the dude was really cool. I had no idea that he was the vice president of A&R and artist development for Columbia Records at one point.
I feel like I heard that at some point before, that he was actually a big wig.
Yeah, had no idea. But to spend basically 2 months unresponsive, you know, his daughter had to come in and set up a conservatorship, basically with the idea that they were going to have to sort all of his stuff pending, you know, something terrible. But they said when he woke up, he couldn't shut up about music. And now, even though he thinks it's going to take a while, he plans on getting back to work eventually.
Yeah, it's terrific news that he was able to get through this. And it, at least initially, sounds like maybe a limited amount of brain damage, you know, because he kind of came back talking about music. And obviously they'll have to see, because those things sometimes don't show themselves until you really start the whole, you know, walking and talking and moving process. Yeah. But the fact he's still with us is wonderful news. So we certainly pass along our best wishes to Matt Pinfield for a speedy recovery, and hopefully he'll be back on the radio sooner rather than later. One other news story today, and this one just got my attention because I feel like this is a topic we talk about a lot on this podcast. We've talked quite a bit about bands that were in that late 80s, early 90s that got lumped in with the term hair metal in a negative way, and because of that they never really got the credit they deserve. So I happened to see this article. It was based off an interview with Tracy Guns talking about the late Janie Lane of Warrant, and kind of another interview that just kind of confirms all the things we've talked about when it comes to Janie Lane and Warrant, and how he mentions him just being over talented, that just a guy who just had this incredible talent for music. And I can't say I'm shocked to see those kind of comments, and just again, more confirmation that Warrant was another one of those bands from that era that, like I said, just were vastly underrated because they kind of got labeled as this, you know, one trick, you know, hair band wonder back in the late 80s.
Yeah. Anytime we talk about Warrant, like, you can't help but think back to like the old documentaries that you could tell he was just so distraught over the success of Cherry Pie because he hated the song so much. He wrote it in no time at all, and it became this huge hit, and unfortunately became kind of what the band was known for, despite them having so many other way better songs. I was kind of going through their first couple albums, and you think just the singles alone are one thing. I mean, Dirty Rotten Filthy Stinking Rich had Down Boys, Heaven, Big Talk, Sometimes She Cries. On top of that, songs that weren't singles, you had In the Sticks, which was a great song, 32 Pennies, another great one. Then moving on to Cherry Pie, obviously, it was a single. Then you had I Saw Red, Uncle Tom's Cabin, Blind Faith. But I think two of the best songs on the album that weren't singles, you had You're the Only Hell Your Mama Ever Raised and Mr. Rainmaker. Just outstanding songs. You know, looking at this story, to hear Tracy Guns talk about it, I kind of realized that Janie Lane was a great songwriter, but the way Tracy kind of puts over his just overall understanding of music and, you know, drums and how everything goes together into the songwriting process. And it's just, it's amazing, and just makes it all the more tragic that he wasn't given really the respect he deserved. He could have been a tremendous songwriter for artists even to this day.
Yeah. Obviously his untimely death with everything, you know, he kind of went through, still sad. And yeah, it's kind of also sad sometimes when guys don't get their flowers until after they're gone, because you feel like of late, we've seen a lot more interviews with people talking about just how great he was and how great they were as a band. And, you know, it, just wish that, you know, maybe somebody in the music press, somebody in the industry in the early 90s would have either recognized that or been willing to kind of go against the grain and say that. Because like you said, not only could Warrant have continued on and done great things, and they did continue on, but continue on in a way that where they would have got label support and actually had these big records after that. But also he could have continued on as a songwriter, a producer, possibly. Engineer. I mean, you start thinking about a guy who knows all the pieces of the puzzle. Those are the guys you kind of want near the end of the record to kind of put it all together and make it good. But it caught my attention because, again, a guy who's a musical genius who doesn't get the credit he deserves because of one mega hit song, which obviously made them a ton of money. So, you know,
that's the problem, is that the fact he was able to throw that together the way he did and it become the hit it did, like, Even if he wasn't fond of the song, that's still a testament to how good he was at the job.
He took this song that he hated. He wrote it.
Knew what would be a hit.
Yeah. And wrote this hit song, and it was a mega hit. And it's still played on, you know, satellite radio to this day.
And really is kind of the quintessential, quote unquote, hair metal song. Like, it isn't. It's an easy target when you want to talk about kind of the negative side of that era of music. But as far as just writing hits go, it's a great hit song.
It is, for sure. And it fit the MTV era. Yeah. It fit, you know, it checked all the boxes. It
understood the assignment.
It did. And it delivered it as well as anybody did. It's just, if that's all you know Warrant by, and I would think people who listen to this podcast are not in that category. But if it is, go back and listen to their stuff. Like, because they're not just a band defined by that one song. Like Mike said, just listed a whole slew of great hits they had. And a lot of those were not radio airplay songs. They're just songs that are just great music songs.
You kind of feel like this would have been the equivalent if they would have had like Jimmy Page and Robert Plant write a disco song.
Yeah.
They probably could have done it and it would have been really good. They probably would have hated it, but it still probably would have been a hit.
For sure. And I feel like that's, you know, something that, like I said, it's impressive that he did it. It's a shame in a lot of ways that kind of defined him, because the guy was just such a genius. But really good article, an interview with Janie Lane, or with Tracy Guns talking about Janie Lane. Definitely worth checking out on Blabbermouth this week. But that's going to wrap up our news headlines for this week. Just a reminder, check out our website, nerdcastempire.com. Of course, we've got all of our back podcasts on there. A reminder, we'll be back with you in just over 12 hours time. About by the time we finish this, it'll be about 13 hours or yeah, that's about right. 13 and a half hours, I guess. So it's 8:30 a.m. Eastern time tomorrow. That'll be when we have the Nerdcast news report, our news for Monday. We'll get you started with all the nerdy news headlines you need. We'll be with you Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 8:30 a.m. Eastern time. And then, of course, we'll be back with you next Sunday, 7 o'clock Eastern, for another episode of the Hard Rock Empire. And we'll be talking the music, I believe, of March the 7th next week. My calendar and my brain is correct. And
sounds right.
That seems reasonable. But that'll be some, I already know we got some really good stuff. There was one album that Mike was looking at for this week that got bumped ahead to the 7th on a release date. So we'll hold that off till next week, but definitely check us out again next Sunday, 7 o'clock Eastern time. Don't forget, drop us a follow on Twitch, drop us a follow on YouTube, wherever you're listening to this. Follow along with our channel. You'll see when all of our videos are posted. We post VODs of all of our podcasts. And of course, you can also download these wherever you get your podcast. The only thing you won't get on the podcast network is the audio clips that come from the bands that we talk about. With that said, it's time to get to the bands that we talk about. And that will be give me the opportunity to post a playlist in both chats for this week. Of course, as is the case, Mike will go through, pull a list of all of the major rock and metal releases for a given date. That date in question this time is February the 28th. And then we'll pull a track from each of those new albums and put them in a playlist, which I have just posted. And then we go through and we pick the top releases for the week to each that we will spotlight on this podcast. And before we get to the picks that we made, there are a couple of releases from major acts that I'm sure we want to spotlight. So let's go ahead and do that first, starting off, I'm sure, with Avantasia's new album, which what I've heard of that so far is really, really good.
Yeah, it's a fine album. I think if you're a fan of older Avantasia, you might feel that it might be a little stripped down compared to some of their previous releases, but still really high quality. Tobias Sommet can't really make bad music. I've given it a couple listens. I definitely need to get into it more. To kind of fully digest it, but it's certainly a good album, worth checking out, I would say.
Yeah.
You do have the Dirk Schneider Balls to the Wall Reloaded. I've only listened to the new version of Balls to the Wall, which is just a classic metal anthem.
It is.
And the new version holds up just as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are kind of the big ones that jump off. I mean, Robin McCauley also had a new album that came out that I haven't had a chance to really dive into, but it's Robin McCauley, so I have no doubt that it's going to be good.
Yeah, I listened to the track that was on the playlist. It was really good. I have a feeling that if people are fans of his, you're going to really dig that. It's another Frontiers release, which, once I'd already picked one Frontiers band, I generally try to steer away from picking a second one. But yeah, his is definitely worth listening to, as is the Dirk Schneider one as well. So good stuff, big name stuff this week as well. But we're going to kind of step off of the beaten path a little bit to give you four of the top releases that you need to check out for this week. And as always, Mike gets us started. Two really good picks this week. What do you have for your first pick for the week?
Yeah, you know, I really think moving forward, I need to start tracking the label of the bands and albums we pick each week, because I feel like we kind of have like a top 1, 2, and 3 of the recurring labels that are just putting out tremendous music.
Yeah.
And this one here is certainly one of them. I could have picked multiple albums from this label this week, but the one I went with is certainly a pretty awesome album. It is the 14th original album, original full-length studio album from a German power metal band. The band started in 1989. They are Brainstorm, and this is their newest album, Plague of Rats.
Yeah, I really, really enjoyed this. Wild album cover. If you're obviously watching on our stream, you can see that we have the album covers of the picks for this week, and it is really something for sure, but the sound really matches the really cool album cover.
Exactly, and it's amazing that you have this German power metal band that's been around as long as they have, and they've kind of flown under my radar. I mentioned they formed in 1989. They released their first full length album in 1997. And kind of looking at the band, we had the story a week or so ago regarding Mastodon and their lineup. you know, having had basically the same lineup for 25 years and that being amazing, which it is. But looking at Brainstorm, three of their five members have been around since 1989. They're original members of the band.
Wow.
You have Dieter Bernhardt, the drummer since 1989, Torsten Illenfeld, who's guitars and backing vocals since 89, Milan Lakaric, guitars and backing vocals since 1989. You have a new guy in the band who's the drummer, or the bassist, I'm sorry, Jim Ramsey, who joined back in 2024. And then on lead vocals, you have Andy B. Franck, who has been there since 1999.
Wow.
He was also the lead singer of Symforce, who I was vaguely familiar with when they were around with him. And also Ivanhoe. He was their singer from 1992 to 98, who appeared on an episode last year with their newest album. Obviously not with him, but their newest album, Healed by the Sun. Clearly, I need to check out more of this band's work. They have 14 studio albums now over that period of time. This is just really high quality, heavy power metal. Like, it's not overly melodic. It's just heavy and melodic. Angry Metal Guy refers to them as the quote most consistent heavy metal band out there, and compares them to Primal Fear, who's a band I also enjoy, so that certainly works out. He also mentions in his review that if you haven't gotten into this band yet, you're a Daft Punk. I'm looking to kind of cure myself of that condition, so I've checked out this album and intend on going further into their catalog to get better acquainted with them. Standout tracks on the album include Beyond Enemy Lines, False Memories, Your Soul That Lingers in Me, and The Dark of Night, and also one other, the one that was on my playlist, I believe, a really cool track called Garuda, Eater of Snakes.
Yeah, sometimes, you know, when I go through and listen to playlists, I just think I listen to something and think this feels like something Mike's going to pick. So maybe I won't pick this one just because it's like you said, it's a power metal band. It's heavy power metal. Like you said, it's not there's anything wrong with melodic power metal. I love melodic power metal, but this just feels like power metal that's rooted in hard rock, kind of a hard rock bass. And I think that just makes for a really enjoyable listen. It's a pretty easy listen, and another group, like you said, that's been around for a long time and it just continues to rock on, and another one that I need to probably catch up on their back stuff as well.
There's a lot out there.
14 albums. That is a lot to check out, but definitely worth checking out. Brainstorm, Plague of Rats, their release for this week. As always, you have two releases, another really interesting, a really good sounding band going to be your second pick this week. What do you got for pick number two?
Yeah, so for pick number two, I stumbled into this band who everything about their sound I love, but it's I like that it feels different than other bands who I think probably have similar inspirations. Mm-hmm. This is the first full length studio album from a band from Finland, a thrash metal band that formed in 2008. They've had several singles and EPs, but here they are now with the first full length. The band is Freedom in Nation. and the album is Until the Lights Go Out.
Yeah. Anytime I get to go to Finland, you know, I'm going to be a fan. And the track, I haven't had the chance to listen to this whole album yet, but the track that was on the playlist was really, really good. So I'm excited to get to listen to this whole thing.
Yeah, so this band is made up of Jukka Ahlström on drums, Jukka Reinholm on guitars, Timo Ahlström on vocals and guitars, and Tommy Atsavara on bass and backing vocals. And I mentioned they kind of have like a different feeling sound. The Metal Archives calls them thrash metal. Their Bandcamp uses a wide variety of tags like metal, power metal, thrash metal, heavy metal, progressive metal, speed metal. A reviewer on the website Frenzy Fire draws comparisons to 90s Metallica and Motorhead, suggesting if those two bands had a child, this is kind of what it would be like. I can see the Metallica comparison because at times this feels like a band that would have been maybe a thrash or speed metal band, but have evolved into this sound kind of as Metallica did in the 90s.
Yeah.
It definitely kind of has some like darker, more down-tuned plodding sounds that you would compare to like a Load and Reload, but not at the set, not in sacrificing the metalness of it. Like, it doesn't feel like hard rock. It still feels metal to me. Being a band from Finland, I kind of get a little bit of Sentenced vibes from these guys, which isn't a bad thing. I think they're more technical metal than Sentenced ever was, but you still kind of get that melancholic feel from them, which is really cool. Standout tracks on the album include The Raven, Second Chance, Tear Down the Wall, Smoking Gun, Down with the Rain, and the track that I picked out, the song Sin Road.
I definitely hear the Metallica comparison. I kind of get the vibe, but it feels like a balance between Metallica of the late 80s and Metallica of the mid 90s, where you have, it's very metal, like kind of where Metallica came from, but there's also that element of the hard rock that kind of made them a commercial success in the 1990s. But this doesn't feel like a commercial, like they didn't sell out.
You know,
this is very much metal, but you definitely feel the influences there. And it makes for a really interesting balance of the song.
Yeah, it's funny because so many bands we listen to here that would probably draw inspiration from thrash and speed metal tend to sound more like somewhere between Kill 'Em All and Master of Puppets Metallica.
Yeah.
So to hear this band who have more almost something that a band would have done during the grunge era, mm-hmm. while staying metal, I think there are moments where you kind of get John Bush era Anthrax feelings from them. I think the vocals kind of lend themselves to that maybe more than some of the other bands that come to mind. But yeah, I don't know if it's a Finnish thrash thing, but it at times kind of has that more sinister sound to it that you would incorporate maybe more to like the downtune Load and Reload Metallica. But I think they're just a little different than what we typically run into. And I think it's really cool.
Yeah. I always like something different, especially when you said the influences are similar to some of the other bands we've come across, but they've kind of taken in a different direction, which was really enjoyable. So check out Free Domination, their new release this week. As always, I have two picks as well, and we are going heavy into the AOR this week, and we're going to start off with what I think might be the best AOR album I've heard in 2025 so far. Granted, we're only 3 months in, but this was a really good release. This is an AOR melodic rock band from Sweden. The band is Perfect Plan, and the album is Heart of a Lion. First off, yes, this is a Frontiers band, so, you know, no real shock that you're going to get high quality, but this is really just about as good as you can do an entire album. So this band was formed in late 2014. This is their fourth studio album. Lead singer Kent Hilly is joined by guitarist Rolf Nordström, bassist Mats Bystrom, drummer Fredrik Forsberg, and keyboardist Leif Ellen. Their main influences, as listed, are Survivor, Foreigner, Europe, and Whitesnake. You can kind of get that feeling.
Who's who right there.
For sure. And I can even hear some Journey, some of the hard rock Journey in this group as well. Vocals are powerful. The music complements it really well. It's not too synthy or keyboard heavy. Everything's kind of got its place. You do have some great keyboard stuff in here, obviously. But it just feels very balanced, and I think that's really what has taken this album to the next level. It's another example of Frontiers just, you know, bringing a band in, and they're just so good, and you just wonder, like, you know, where this band could go. Again, this is only their fourth album. It just feels like there's even more for them to do out there, but this is one of those front-to-backers for me. It was really, really good. Standout tracks include Heart of a Lion, All Night, Turn Up Your Radio. And the track we're going to listen to on the podcast is the second track, We Are Heroes. This is when I listened to this album, before I'd even looked up the information on it, I just thought, this has got to be some 80s singer or something that Frontiers has paired with this band. And to find out that this is just a band that's intact, this is not some sort of all-star project from Frontiers, I was blown away, because like I said, the quality of the vocals and the harmonies are so good, and everything around it just really complements it well. I was just totally blown away with this Perfect Plan release. Mike, your thoughts on these guys?
It really feels like there are a handful of bands that have just mastered the formula at this point to that sound. And this is certainly one of them. I just got to wonder, with so many movie and TV show remakes and reboots we've seen, like, why aren't we going out and tapping bands like these to provide the soundtrack? Because that that makes all the sense in the world to me. These guys would be perfect for the new Karate Kid movie. What are we doing? What, why didn't we figure that out?
Yeah.
But yeah, they kind of nailed it.
Yeah, it's a great album. Can't say enough about it. It'll certainly just be in the running for the year end stuff. As far as my picks go, I thought it was really excellent. Definitely check those guys out. Perfect Plan, my first pick of this week. Got two picks as always. And pick number two is also an AOR act, but this is a band that is in their debut album out of the UK. This is Heaven's Rain with Northern Lights. And it's interesting when you have two AOR picks, which I don't always try to do just because there's just the natural tendency to try to compare and contrast when you have two bands that are kind of doing the same thing. This is a little bit of a different sound, even though they're still doing AOR. Three members of this band, including vocalist Rick Caton, were members of the band Rolling Thunder, who toured at one point with bands like UFO, Blue Oyster Cult, Michael Schenker, and Brian Adams. So there is some experience behind this group, even though this is their first album together under this band, Heaven's Rain. In addition to Caton, joining him from Rolling Thunder is Ian Linen and Steve Birch. Joined by Ricky Moss and Gaz Birch to make up the full band. Rock Posers review of the album compared them to bands like Journey, Taiketto, Whitesnake, and Harum Scarum. So kind of an overlap of the first band, a little bit different sound. I can hear that for sure in this album. I think when you're comparing these two, just again, because it's kind of natural and probably has a little bit to do with maybe the label or whatever, how they mix it, and it's going to be different. It feels like this one's a little less polished, and I don't mean that in a bad way. It's maybe not as perfect sometimes the stuff that comes out of Frontiers that is almost sometimes polished to a fault. Just feels a little more raw, which I do dig. And it also has a little more of a bluesy feel, which that's kind of when you hear the comparison to Whitesnake, I feel like that's kind of where that comes in. There's a little bit more blues in this AOR, which I always enjoy. It's another really good album for the first album as a band for these five together. I think they've really done an amazing job. Standout tracks include Here We Go Again, The Good Die Young, Northern Lights, and the song we're going to listen to on the podcast, City Sights. I picked this song in particular because I felt like of the tracks on the song of this album, that was the one that gave me the most like Whitesnake type vibes, that bluesy kind of rock. But there was also some really cool stuff in the mix that I noticed having headphones on for the first time compared to listening to it through my speakers. But like I said, just another really fun album, really easy listen. And like I said, just maybe a little more bluesy rock than the first AOR, which like I said, just a little bit different vibe out of these guys. But your thoughts on these guys?
Yeah, I would definitely agree with your take as far as, and I don't even know if I would say has less polish. It feels less like they wanted to capture the sound of Journey.
Yeah.
With this band as opposed to the other one, which either one's a creative decision, whatever sound you want to go for. They both sound good, and it's no exception with these guys.
Yeah, like I said, definitely a different sound, but I really enjoyed this album as well. Two really strong AOR picks this week in a week that had a ton of it was out there. But I thought these two kind of really stood apart of the AOR stuff. So check out Heaven's Rain and their first release as a group. Definitely highly recommended. It is time to get to the vault where Mike and I will go through some classic albums, and we'll get to Mike's vault pick first. And Mike has gone back to going through literally the vault, which is literally his vault. Of course, he has an immense CD collection. Maybe haven't talked about that on the podcast recently. We've talked about it obviously a long time ago, but we're 57 episodes into the Hard Rock Empire. Amazing. So maybe we haven't really talked about, but you know, Mike, as you've probably gathered, if you kind of joined us along the way, a big fan of being a physical collector of media, picking up these albums that he's really enjoyed over the years. And anytime we get a chance to kind of go through those and look at some of the stuff that, you know, kind of shaped your fandom of music in your formative years and maybe into your early 20s, it's always really interesting just to kind of see what's out there. And this is an album that you picked this week that is definitely on that list of formative albums and is definitely a classic. Tell us about your vault pick.
Yeah, this one is a wild one. And Yeah, going back through my vault, you know, doing it by letter, it's always interesting because I kind of go into each week thinking, man, I got so many options to pick from or whatever. And then I go to actually look at the letter and it's like, man, the letter C for me is basically just a bunch of Cradle of Filth and Collective Soul albums. I mean, there's obviously more to it than that, but like,
I mean, those are great choices.
Those are the two like kind of predominant bands within the letter C in my collection. So I'm like, well, I picked Cradle of Filth the first time around all those weeks ago. And I feel like we've talked about Collective Soul not all that long ago. So I had to go a different direction, and the direction I went, I'm not typically a huge stoner or doom metal fan. It was really something about this album that just felt, if not different, something that caught my attention about it. And I think I first became aware of it through like the old like cable system, like music channel, like, yeah, the Music Choice or whatever they were called, because the metal channel would always play some random stuff. Like, I'm pretty sure that's where I first heard Rumpelstiltskin Grinder. And every now and then I'll see an album, I'm like, why does that sound familiar? And there'll be some track on it. It's like, wait, that's where I heard that from. I remember that now. Awesome. But yeah, this one is an album from 2005 from a band who I wasn't aware of at the time. I kind of followed them for this album and the one after it, but definitely a different thing. Kind of doomy, kind of stonery, kind of progressive, just all over the place. The band is Cathedral, and this is their 2005 album, The Garden of Unearthly Delights.
Yeah, I don't know this album. I would like to maybe hear the whole thing at some point, but I do know North Berwick Witch Trials. Yeah. But I'm sure the whole album is amazing. Tell us about it.
You either love it or hate it. I mean, that's really the best way to put it. Like, if you can get into just really sludgy, grimy metal that's just kind of outside of the box, this is kind of what that is. But yeah, it was North Berwick Witch Trials that I'd heard on the television years ago that, kind of the downtuned guitar riff on that song just was so catchy to me. It was just infectious. And I had to keep listening to it and had to play it. And it was just, it's so cool. And I still feel that way to this day. Like, I don't know. I can't remember what the tuning is they use on it, but it's way down there. But anyway, as a band, these guys ran from 1989 to 2013. They formed after Lee Dorian, who was at the time the vocalist for Napalm Death, kind of got disillusioned by the direction of that band and went off on his own. He got together with Mark Griffiths, a roadie for the band Carcass. Apparently they kind of had some similar tastes as far as doom and metal bands like Black Sabbath and Candlemass. And that's kind of how they got running with this very, very doom metal band. I mentioned that I listened to this album and then the follow-up, which came out like 5 years later, called The Guessing Game, which was even further into left field than this album, but so creative and so different. You know, when you're used to listening to power metal, thrash metal, stuff that doesn't really surprise you, like, you know what you're getting into. This band was kind of a breath of fresh air as far as what they were doing. Obviously North Berwick Witch Trials has this great spoken word part at the beginning and then into that riff, just so cool. There's another song, Corpse Cycle, that has an equally cool guitar melody going on. Just more melody than you would expect from like stoner metal, I guess. Maybe that's kind of how I would describe it. You have the song Fields of Zagara, which is this 2 minute kind of peaceful, clean guitar break before going into the ultra sludgy fury that is Oro the Manslayer. Then if you thought, man, these guys just need to be more progressive, they have the 27 minute long title track, essentially The Garden, which is, again, all over the place. Got some female vocals in there, which are really cool. Just a really strange album. And then you have the final track, which is silent until the last minute and then contains a secret track, which honestly, I didn't know they were still doing by 2005. I thought that was kind of a relic of the era when you'd have your portable CD player like plugged into your cassette deck in your car. Like, I figured by 2005 that wasn't as prominent, but yeah, it's there and it's cool. Standout tracks on the album include Tree of Life and Death, North Berwick Witch Trials, Corpse Cycle, Oro the Manslayer. This isn't for everyone, and I'm not going to suggest it is, but it's a great change of pace, and and just creative, but not at the expense of being unmusical. And I think with the playlist we go through each week, every now and then you run into like some of the droning kind of music that I would argue may not even really be music. This still has melody. It's rough at times, but it's listenable, and I really enjoyed it.
Obviously, the album is, like I said, North Berwick Witch Trials is a classic song for sure. I think maybe start with that track.
Yeah.
And if you enjoy that, I think you've got a shot to get into the album. I'm interested in knowing more about the note on Wikipedia about this album that it says that the limited edition Digipack version of this album contained an apple shaped sniffle CD disc that emits a smell of an apple when rubbed on the label side or heated during playback in a CD or CD-ROM drive.
Yeah, you know, I don't think I have that version. I think I just have the straight jewel case edition. I'll have to double check now, but I don't remember that. That but like, that is awesome.
I mean, if it were anybody else other than this band, I would think somebody just edited their Wikipedia page and throw that in there to see if this sounds like something that Cathedral might do. Yeah, and I would like to listen to the whole album just to kind of see what the rest of it is about, because I do enjoy North Berwick Witch Trials. So I feel like I can get into the rest of this, but yeah, interesting stuff from Cathedral for sure. But definitely worth checking out. Again, the Garden of Unearthly Delights, Mike's Vault pick for this week. Well, we are finally to what I'm going to like call the end of my gimmick on the vault, because man, it has been slim pickings the last few weeks. And I know we're to 2020. We started this gimmick many, many, many weeks ago with the year 1969. I picked the Chicago Transit Authority, the debut album with the band that would be Chicago. And we've gone through year after year and talked about albums that have been influential or stood out, or in recent years, just something that I enjoyed listening to because it's been kind of tough. And going through this list of albums, I know I miss stuff occasionally. So thankfully, Mike will go through at the end and catch the stuff that I missed. Because, man, I had to have missed stuff because I only found a couple things this week and for 2020. And, you know, a lot of the albums in 2020, as you go through, were pushed back several weeks because of the pandemic. I've never listened to these albums, probably never will, but just notable albums that there were two bands that were influenced by Back to the Future that were on this list. The band, I don't know how, but they found me with the album Razzmatazz, which has a song on there that I have heard covered, Nobody Likes the Opening Band, which is a pretty catchy short song. And then a few weeks later, we got the band McFly, which, I mean, that's nothing.
McFly.
Nothing very subtle about that, with Young Dumb Thrills. So just worth mentioning. Great to see anybody that's influenced by Back to the Future, whether their music's any good or not, I have no idea. Had to mention The Weeknd as the additional pick, their album After Hours, and I probably wouldn't know this album if not for the Super Bowl halftime show where he played.
It wasn't everywhere when it came out.
And the fact that he's, and I guess this trend is continuing, he's doing a theme song for WrestleMania again this year. You know, that's kind of
Travis Scott.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, his music is very catchy as far as like modern pop rock. I think he's definitely among the top artists. Obviously Blinding Lights was on this album. And unless you lived under a rock, you know, that song, it was literally everywhere. But there's some other really good stuff on that album. I'd like to actually just check out the whole thing because like I said, as far as modern pop rock goes, I think he's pretty talented. Beyond that, it was kind of a stretch to find something, so I delved back over to Japan once again to find my vault pick, and we're going with one of the all-time great Anna Song artists of Japan, Lisa, with her album Leo 9. It's the fifth studio album by Lisa, released October 14th, 2020. Today was the first day I had a chance to listen to the whole album. It's really good, as you would expect, beginning to end. It includes her most popular song of all time, Gurenge, which was the opening theme to Demon Slayer. Another song, if you're an anime fan, you've heard that song a million times, even if you've never watched that show. But we also had Adamas, which was the theme song for Sword Art Online, Alicization, I believe. And then there was also a song Unlasting, which was another anime theme song, I believe an ending for Sword Art Online Alicization. So all the tracks on this album are really good. Gerenge is, that's just stuck in everybody's head if you're an anime fan, but really, really good album. Lisa's really good. It peaked at number one on the Oricon chart. It was number 27 on the year-end chart, certified gold by the RIAJ. She's really talented. Definitely worth going back and checking out more of her catalog. I would like to go back and do that, but this may be one of her top all-time albums, especially with that one song on there in particular. But next week, starting next week, I'm going to be diving into the Frontiers acts. I've decided that I'm going to the first week. We're going to go A to Z, but we're going to do it twice. We'll do A for 2 weeks, and I'm going to the first week pick a band and then pick an album and feature it. And then the next week, I'm going to put the rest of the A letter bands in a randomizer, have a randomizer pick a band, and have a randomizer pick an album, and then just listen to that album and see what we get. I have no idea how that's going to go. Hopefully, I'll be able to find all the albums, but it should be really interesting. But I know there's going to be more stuff from 2020 I missed, like I said, because you get to looking through those albums, and sometimes you just look right over bands. But what else do you have from 2020?
This isn't from 2020, but since you did pick that Lisa album, I feel like, you know, I need for the metal purist to mention that the following year, Marty Friedman did have his Tokyo Jukebox 3 album come out, which has a cover of Gerenge on it.
Nice.
Obviously, it's amazing because it's Marty Friedman. But, you know, if you like Anna songs and metal, definitely check out any of Marty Friedman's Tokyo Jukebox albums. They're all really cool. Yeah, as far as 2020 goes, this is another year where I have a decent amount of albums from that year, but I didn't give them all as much of a listen as I needed to. So there were some that I am pretty well familiar with that I would recommend, but there are others that kind of bum me out that I see it. It's like, yeah, I know I own that, but I can't remember what all was on it. That's all that interesting. Among the ones that I did give time to, Demons and Wizards released 3 in 2020. Their last album, really cool stuff as always. If you like Blind Guardian or Iced Earth, it's definitely for you. Tracks like Diabolic, Invincible, Wolves in Winter, Midas Disease. As far as re-releases go, we had Gwar releasing the 30th anniversary set of Scum Dogs of the Universe. If you've never listened to Gwar, this is a great entry point because it's classic, it's metal, it's just a fun album with tracks like Salamanizer, Slaughterama, Sick of You, and Maggots. Jorn Land released his second heavy rock radio album in 2020. Nice. Some of the covers there include Lonely Nights from Brian Adams, New York Minute by Don Henley, Needles and Pins from The Searchers, and Mystery by Dio.
I don't think I've heard that second album. I think I need to check that out.
Yeah, it's not as lengthy as the first one. I feel like he kind of like went back and recovered some of the other ones, like remastered them and added to that album. But what he did do was good stuff. Chimera released Master of Illusions, classic kind of AOR melodic rock album. Tracks like Walk Away, The First Time, Master of Illusions. The Megas released their second or third Belmont's crossover EP called Snakes. If you like video game music, this is definitely for you. It has the song Stalker, which is a Castlevania song, a new version of the Elecman song from Mega Man 1, Evolution of Circuitry, a song from Mega Man X, the Storm Eagle background music and created into a song, which is really awesome. And a cover of Electric Light Orchestra, the song Yours Truly 2095, which is a really cool song, both the original and the cover, certainly worth checking out. Then some albums that I didn't really get a chance to listen to enough. Axel Rudy Pell released Sign of the Times. Kiko Loureiro had Open Source. Metallica released SNM2.
That's one I don't think I knew existed until I went through this list. I would like to listen to that though.
Russell Allen and Annette Olson with Worlds Apart. Serenity released The Last Night, and Trivium released What the Dead Men Say. So I got some homework as far as catching up to the music from 2020.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff on there once again, and you know, maybe some of that stuff will show up as I go through the vault again. And some of those bands I know, Olsen and Land was their album. I know that's a Frontiers release.
Yeah, Alan and Olsen, that was that Alan Olsen, sure that's, yeah, that's Frontiers. Russell Allen has his own dedicated Wikipedia page to his collaboration albums.
Oh,
which is kind of funny.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. But yeah, so it should be interesting going through that and trying to find some really cool stuff to go through on the vault for the next few weeks. Because like I said, the year by year thing has gotten increasingly more difficult as we've gotten in these later years. But really good stuff this week. Really good new stuff as well. Make sure you check that out. Check out Mike's playlist. I think you're going to find something you really like this week. That is going to wrap things up for this edition of the Hard Rock Empire. We'll be back in about 12 and a half hours. Get my math right this time. 8:30 a.m. Eastern time tomorrow morning, as we will be back once again with the Nerdcast News Report, all the nerdy news you need to know to get your week started. 8:30 a.m. live on Twitch and on YouTube. Join us for that. And we'll be back with another episode of the Hard Rock Empire next Sunday night, 7 o'clock Eastern time. And it'll be the music of March the 7th that we'll be talking about next week on the Nerdcast Empire. Big thanks to everyone for joining us. A big thanks to Stove Lake Media for their continued support of our podcast. Big thanks to Mike for all his hard work on this podcast. And a big thanks to you wherever and whenever you are listening to the Nerdcast Empire. That's going to wrap things up for Mike and the entire crew. I'm Matt saying so long. Don't forget to join the Empire, the Nerdcast Empire.